It's still kind of strange to realize that there is an Illinois town that you get to by going west over the Mississippi River. Kaskaskia, the first capital of the state, is technically and legally in Randolph County, Illinois, even though there is no land connection anymore between the town and the county. More on that unique geographical oddity later. Right now, for longtime Kaskaskia native Emily Lyons, Kaskaskia is simply home.
At least one branch of my family dates back to the first group of French that were there before it, 1710.
It's not a teeny, teeny island,
no,
is it?
No, the island actually now is 14,000 acres, and there's 10,000 acres enclosed within the levee. But there are quite a few of those acres on the outside of the levee are also farmed.
This interview was recorded inside the historic Randolph County Museum on a tall bluff in Chester overlooking the Mississippi River. And being surrounded by the authentic pictures and documents covering 300 years only added to the deep sense of history as told by Emily, who is also the museum's director.
I was born and grew up there and went away to school, but then came back and I taught school on the island for many years, and I still have property on the island.
Of course, when you were a youngster, you probably didn't realize it was so historically significant.
Well, probably not as much as today that I realized its historical significance. However, we did the usual things, you know. We walked to school. When I was very young, we walked to school, rode bicycles, and played games. Yeah, different games without. And it was actually the Egyptian Electric brought electric in 1948. At one time there were three schools. And then as time went on, when the machinery gets bigger on the farms, the farms get bigger and the population gets smaller because they don't need as many people to work the farm. So as happened all over the country. So gradually the population decreased.
But a long time ago in the 1700s, settlers from all over were moving into the peninsula. Notice my word choice. I said peninsula, not island.
Of course, at that time, Kaskaskia would not have been an island.
That's historian and author Gillum Ferguson.
It's easy to forget, of course, that Kaskaskia was once a peninsula with the Kaskaskia River on the east side and the Mississippi on the west, and it remained that way until and didn't become an island until 1881, which is an interesting story in itself. So at that time, probably in 1700, probably the Indian or French presence there would have been very small. There would have been a French settlement at Cahokia, recently founded around the Church of the Holy Family there. But I would say that the Kaskaskia were still in the process of moving down. I think the traditional date given for the foundation of Kaskaskia is 1707 or thereabouts. I wouldn't take that to the bank. It might have been 1711. It rhymes. But anyway, it was certainly in the first decade of the 18th century, there was the beginnings of a trading post and a mission there as well.
Missions, organized by Europeans, played a big role in the settling of our country. And Kaskaskia was no different. In his book, Illinois in the War of 1812, Ferguson says the well-known French Jesuit missionary Father Jacques Marquette, more commonly known as Père Marquette, was a big part of the growth of Kaskaskia.
Marquette encountered the Kaskaskia Indians far upriver near what's now the city of Utica, or anyone who's been to Starved Rock State Park. Starved Rock was really across the river from the village of the Kaskaskia Indians. And he celebrated a mass there, which is considered to be the beginning of the mission of the Immaculate Conception to the Kaskaskias, which is the full name. And ultimately, as the Kaskaskia were downriver, down the Illinois River, by stronger tribes, the mission moved with them. And it was not, of course, in the early years necessarily continuously staffed by a priest, but it existed as the effort of the Catholic Church to reach and minister to the Kaskaskia Indians. Of course, ended up on the Kaskaskia River at Kaskaskia, was now Kaskaskia, Illinois. Marquette was an explorer and a traveler. He certainly was hoping to preach the gospel to the Indians, but one of his primary missions was simply to try to find where this network of rivers ended. And they got as far south as, I think, either lower Arkansas or northern Mississippi before realizing that they had to turn around under that particular at that particular time. He was traveling with a French trader named Joliet, and of course we have a city in Illinois which now bears his name. They were a good team, seemed to have worked well together, but they were in no ways a military force.
For longtime resident Emily Lyons, this church would hold the village together through the centuries. And in 1818, Kaskaskia was named the first capital of the young state.
They started moving the church, which was the prized thing for the communities then. That was the center of activity. In 1891, and then had the new church built. They took down the old church and rebuilt it and had it firmly established by 1894. The church itself was formed in 1675 on the Illinois River. They moved the Jesuits with the Kaskaskia Mission they had formed there, moved down to this site, which is now Randolph County, in 1703. So we've had a church established there since 1703 until now, and we still continue with our service.
But despite the presence of Father Marquette's Immaculate Conception Church, in the 1800s, life at Kaskaskia was unruly. Again, historian Gillam Ferguson.
There were no law enforcement authorities and no law here for a while. In fact, in the 80s, Kaskaskia was ruled by a bandit named John Dodge. In my book, there's a wonderful line from a traveler who visited Kaskaskia during this period, saying that he'd arrived at the long sought after Kaskaskia, and it was a miserable place, could never be a place of much importance. And the particular line that has always amused me is, "The inhabitants are all generals, colonels, majors, land speculators, or adventurers, with now and then a robber and a cutthroat." It was a frontier town, and it attracted what a frontier town did, men on the make, men on the run, and it was probably a fairly exciting place to live.
And in the early 1800s, it caught the attention of lawmakers back east.
Well, it was first the capital of the territory, beginning in 1809, and it was the territorial capital until statehood at the end of 1818, and then was briefly the state capital until I think the vote to move the capital was in 1819, and the actual move took place in 1820. It was contemplated by the original Constitution that the capital would be moved, and so that in fact was carried out by the first legislature. But the first term of the Supreme Court met there, and if you look at the bound volumes of the Illinois reports, the first volume, Volume 1, it's at Kaskaskia, the session of the Illinois Supreme Court, with their opinions from that date, still part of our law.
Even though it was the capital, the city was not real large.
It had lost a lot of population, as most of the French villages along the Illinois side had after the French and Indian War. The British had expelled the French in 1763 by treaty, 1765 by actual occupation. And that really was the making of the city of St. Louis. Many of the French settlers preferred to move to the west side of the river, where they could live in what was then Spanish-controlled territory, and at least under the rule of fellow Catholics, and, of course, away from the hated British.
Another very important part of this story has to do with water. Remember, early on, Kaskaskia was not an island. Instead, Emily Lyons says, it was a
peninsula of where we are, between the Kaskaskia River and the Mississippi River. The just above the where the Chester Bridge is now, the river curved to the west and went by St. Mary's, Missouri, which was called St. Mary's Landing because so many steamships stopped there at the landings, and went up. Through the years, nature does its thing, and it changed, and it started curving in. In 1881, again, very cold winter, lots of ice, and a big ice jam formed on the bottom side of that horseshoe. So as it kept coming down, it couldn't get through. And so evidently this strip, narrow strip, which had narrowed from 5 miles to about 300 feet, it started running over that because the ice wouldn't let the natural river flow. And of course, once it runs over, it continues. Once your sod is gone, you keep losing topsoil. When it reached the other side, it fell down into the Kaskaskia River, and according to an eyewitness story, which we have, it fell 5 feet.
So town officials knew they had to do something, and so they said,
well, it just keeps cutting off over on the eastern side, and so we better think about moving inland. So the Illinois legislature passed their resolution that anyone living in that type of circumstances could move inland away from that and still retain all of their government status.
In case you're wondering, what did Illinois' first Capitol building look like? Gillum Ferguson's answer might surprise you.
It was doubled as a tavern when not in use by the legislature, and it had also been the meeting place of the 1818 Constitutional Convention, which drafted Illinois' state constitution. It was a brick building, and there are photographs of it which survive, and it was a brick building. It was 2 stories tall. It was, if you look at it, not a particularly prepossessing building, but probably for its time and place, fairly substantial. The roads tended to be fairly wide in the French manner, and the houses tended to be surrounded by gardens, often within picket fences. A lot of the residences probably would have been built in the French style, with the logs running horizontally, as opposed, or running vertically, as opposed to horizontally, running up and down. And if you look at the old Creole house in Prairie du Rocher, you'll probably get an idea of what they looked like. Set low, single story with the wide verandas in front of them. The buildings probably would not have been included a lot of permanent, expensive brick structures because it was prone to flooding.
In 1820, the Illinois Capitol moved from Kaskaskia to a more inland location, Vandalia, to get away from flood risk. But also, this move had a lot to do with good old-fashioned private enterprise. Again, Emily Lyons.
Actually, what drove that was by this time you had a lot of the English moving over from the eastern coast, and they saw all this land. The land speculators actually drove that. And some of them had gone out and laid claim to huge acreage. And so if they could get the capital moved over there, then there would be a lot of people move in there to support everything that was needed. And then those people would come in and buy their land and set up their property and so forth. And that isn't brought out too often, but that was driven by the land speculators and lobbying the legislators, the assembly.
The Capitol was eventually moved to Springfield in 1839. But what about Kaskaskia today?
Now the Catholic Church is very active. We have the church and the rectory and the first county courthouse also were all moved down to New Kaskaskia, and we use those at the church. We have the shrine building where the Liberty Bell of the West is kept, And that complex is sort of the center. We have a big picnic Labor Day weekend, on Sunday of Labor Day weekend, on it, which is a big activity. We have a big celebration of 4th of July at the Liberty Bell of the West. It's basically farming community. And that is a big business. I mean, that brings, you know, selling, producing, they're up to now, it's not unusual to be getting 175 bushel of corn off of an acre, or 40, 50 bushels of soybeans off an acre. And so soybeans might be selling for $10, $12 a bushel. And so actually there's a lot of million-dollar transactions going on there.
And for current island natives, their link to the past will never go away.
We have many artifacts in the church that date to the early 1700s, and we maintain it. We have all volunteer crew, and we maintain it because we have so many people come back to find the areas where their ancestors first started. So we like to think that we give them an idea of remembering and respecting your ancestors and all that they did to create a place for them to be productive today.
And while the job of running the state with the fifth largest economy in the country falls on the marbled columns and halls of Springfield, Kaskaskia, constantly monitored by the ancient Mississippi, will forever have its own chapter in history. I'm Kevin Boucher.